gives me great pleasure to introduce you to Margaret Anderson Killer. Is one of our candidates, and she's also the president of Minnesota High Technical Association.
Thank you so much. Now, this is strange to sit here. I will say that. Well, good afternoon, everyone.
I'm Nancy Black, Madam Speaker, and I'm just going to explain the process that we'll have over the next 40 minutes.
Correct.
And that is you'll have 3 to 5 minutes to make an opening statement. Then we have a set of 7 questions that we've asked all applicants.
Great.
Then there's going to be some open questions from the council members.
Excellent.
I will ask you if you have any questions about the role of being a trustee. And then if you wish, you may make a 2 to 3 minute closing statement.
Terrific.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to grab a pen out, though. So
sure.
Hang on 1 second. I can take notes. I suspect I'll need to do. I have some questions that great. And let's see, there's water poured, so thank you, whoever poured the water.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome, and when you're ready, you can make your opening statement.
All right. Well, thank you so much for inviting me in to do this interview and for participating in this part of the process, which I know is time-consuming, so thank you for your time. I am well aware of that. And I wanted to use this time to talk a little bit about my background, my connection to the MNSCU system, as well as a little bit about higher ed in terms of where I see it in our state and in our region and, frankly, the country in terms of what's needed out of Minnesota. So I wanted to start and say, you know, I enjoyed very much my time of public service, my service in the House representative, my ability to have the opportunity to serve as Speaker of the House was a wonderful, wonderful time. I've also been really enjoying my time in civic service, being a civic leader, now being out of the public election cycle. And with that, being the president and CEO of the Minnesota High Tech Association, higher education is something that I think about just about every single day, because the member companies of the Minnesota High Tech Association talk about it every single day, about the workforce needs. And we'll get more into that in a second. My passion has remained consistent in passion for higher education in Minnesota, improvement in higher education, but more deeply to the connection to MNSCU. My great-grandmother was a graduate of Mankato Normal School. She was a teacher in a one-room schoolhouse in Blue Earth County. My mother is a graduate of now Minnesota State Mankato, but it's very hard for us to all say that. We often still say Mankato State. And she was trained as an art teacher. She taught at North St. Paul High School for 2 years, and then met my father and went home and was a partner in the farming operation. And she really still values, and I'd say that that's one of those things. My dad was eighth grade educated. And so from the time I was a little kid, my mother would say to me and my dad would say to me, "You're going to college." And I think that comes from that connection to Minnesota State Mankato, my great-grandmother, my grandmother, my sister, almost all of my nieces are graduates as well. And education has been a key contributor to Minnesota's success, not just my family, but Minnesota's success. And when you think about this, we rank second with adults with diplomas in Minnesota. We are 11th with those with a degree. And for high school diploma, 11th with those with a degree. And for 60 years ago, I want you to think about this, only half of Minnesotans even had a high school degree. And now when you think about where we've come to and what's needed in the future, it's really important to be thinking about this. A generation ago, maybe a generation and a half ago, Minnesota leaders made a decision that they didn't like being 25th in per capita income. And one of the big choices they made was being able to move forward and make investments in higher education. And this state college and university system, encompassing both the technical and the four-year degree, was a key part of being able to rise up and become 10th in the top 10 of per capita income in the country. Now, there has been some moving back and forth in the last couple of years on that number, but it still remains that we are strong in our dedication to higher education in the state of Minnesota as a value. And I hope that if I am chosen to go forward as a trustee, that I can uphold that value, because I believe that is a common value among Minnesotans to pursue a higher education degree, a two-year degree, a four-year degree, and for some people even beyond. And why is it so important? 70% of the jobs in Minnesota in 2018 will require some form of higher education, a two-year degree, a four-year degree, a certificate. And right now, we are back where we were in the 60s on higher education, like high school. So we are below 50% on college degrees, on certificates, and two-year and four-year degrees. And we have to get to 70%, and 2018 is not a long time away. So we have a real challenge here. We are only the third highest entity in the country to need this level of college graduates or certificate completion. The only two above us, North Dakota, and we can all see what's happening there. Small population, growing economy because of the diversity of the economy, and the District of Columbia. And so I think this frames up what we need to do. You all know Minsku already educates over 60% of Minnesota's undergraduates. And that is a very important piece of being able to move forward. But we have work to do. We still have a persistent achievement gap in this state, especially for socioeconomic differences. Kids of color, particularly African American and Native American students, do not complete high school at as high a rate. And therefore, it's very difficult to move on to that higher education degree if you haven't even completed high school. I like the work that Chancellor McCormick and Chancellor Rosenstone have been doing, former Chancellor McCormick, in terms of being able to lead the Board of Trustees and the board working with them to focus in on strategic initiatives. I'm going to just highlight two of them, the Power of You, at the St. Paul campus, and MCTC, Minneapolis Community Technical College, a school that I was very familiar with. I represented the district that encompasses the college campus, providing the opportunity for students who have need to be able to complete their first 2 years of college debt-free. And being able to do that, I think, is a really important piece. I actually know students who have done this. I know students who will be doing this coming out of the Minneapolis Public Schools. It is making a difference. And so being able to focus our energies there is really important, I believe. And then I also think being able to do the listening sessions that are happening, which we did, MHTA did participate with the system on the listening session, one of them that focused on IT and technology workforce. These are important communications between the business community, the broader community, and the Minsku system to be able to focus in the programs of the future and be able to update and keep current. So I'm going to stop there, and I look for the opportunity here to answer questions as well as have a little more dialogue. So thank you.
First question. Please describe your understanding of the role of a trustee and explain why you consider yourself to be a good candidate for this role.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe that a trustee is someone who is put in trust of this precious system that has been put together. And the system is still young. I think we have to remember that. We have now a new leader in charge of the system with Chancellor Rosenstone. And the trustees need to both, I think, support the strategic vision that has been set out for the Minsku system, be able to also push back on critical times when maybe there needs to be adjustment to the strategic vision, and also be able to have open dialogue about what is needed going forward. I think importantly, I do not see the trustee's job as a meddling job, as a micromanaging job, as a legislating job. It is really about the governance of this system and working closely with the chancellor, the leadership team, the interaction with the legislature that is provided through certain opportunities, and then also with the various parts of the system. But I do think it's a high-level job, and it does have responsibility around making sure that we are on track to meet our critical workforce needs of the future.
Thank you.
Describe your past board experience and its relevance to the Board of Trustees.
Okay. So, here's the fascinating part. I did serve on a few boards while I was in the legislature, and those boards were often more advisory boards because of the time commitment at the legislature. So it was probably a little less governance and more ability to help out, make phone calls, do those sorts of things, maybe raise a few funds every now and then, things like the 4-H Foundation board that I served on for a number of years, being able to do those sorts of work. Now, the interesting part is when you leave elected office, lots of people want you to be on their board. And so I have had many opportunities already to serve on boards and am currently serving on a number. Let me talk about a couple. The Textile Center of Minnesota, which is really an organization that has been built over the last 20 years, it was a situation where I actually sort of imposed myself on them as a board member, frankly, instead of them coming after me. I love textiles. It's a passion of mine. And I went out and had a relationship with the executive director, had known her for years, and said, "Why haven't you asked me to be on your board?" She said, "Well, I never thought you would say yes." And I said, "Well, I'm telling you I want to serve." And so I have been a very active member of that board for almost 2 years now and really loving the work. I serve on the Facilities Planning Committee. We are working on planning a major expansion across University Avenue right now. We are space constrained with light rail coming. It's a very exciting time. We just went through the selection of a new executive director. I was not on the selection committee, but as a board member, very active in helping us define what we wanted, and have been pretty consistent about my board attendance and board participation there, as well as my financial giving to the Textile Center board. I would say I'm going to contrast that with a different sort of board that is more work-related, the Genesis Works board, which is a board that I am on through the service in my current office as president and CEO of the High Tech Association. Genesis Works is really a college preparatory, college-bound program that helps students who may not be doing well but have a desire to do better, and we use information technology as the hook for these students. And so Genesis Works trains about 200 rising senior students in the Twin Cities area using information technology through an 8-week boot camp, one in Minneapolis, one in St. Paul, and then places these students in this program all year long where they're information technology specialists, usually help desk folks. Now, would we love it if some of them choose information technology as a career when they go to college? We would. But that's not the main goal. The main goal is to build soft skills, to build work skills, to build the consistency towards attaining college. I'm happy to report that 96% of our students for the last 5 years have gone on to a 2- or 4-year college program, most of them here in Minnesota, not exclusively. The 4% that don't actually go into the military, and that doesn't get counted as college for the purposes of saying they're going on to further their career. But we know that military often return, military service people return and do complete their degree. So we think that this is a really good thing. So I'm a very active board member there in being able to recruit companies to the program. It is on it. The model of that is not the model that you think of for most nonprofit organizations. It is actually a fee-for-service nonprofit organization, so in the social entrepreneurship realm. And the great part is we earn most of our revenue through our students going out and working for companies like Medtronic, like 3M, like Ecolab, and being able to have real-life experiences. So being a board member has been a really important part of my civic service. I really enjoy it a great deal, and I try to be as active as possible.
Thank you.
What do you see as the key issues on the horizon for higher education in Minnesota, and specifically for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities system?
Well, let's start even one layer up, higher education in the United States. There is a crisis brewing that people are talking about every single day, and that is the crisis of how much a higher education is costing. And I think the ability to deliver value for the subject matter that the students are studying that then can convert into things like internships and work experience in the college system to be able to then graduate and become someone who's employed is probably the most important thing that everyone faces today. There is a lot of skepticism. I am a mom of an 18-year-old who graduated this year, and it was a fascinating experience to go through with him. And I have to say, as a family, we had many tough decisions to make along the way. His heart was set on Boston. And he was lucky enough to attain admittance to Boston University. When we went out to visit for the second time, though, and running what was up on the Consumer Protection Financial Bureau website, which was the cost of college calculator, it's no longer up, actually, right now. It was a demo period that was open for this college year. You could put in very fine, granular information about what was being offered to you, what sort of aid or loans you had, what sort of family resources to put in, and then it could kick out for you what your debt indebtedness level was for the next 10 years by month. It was eye-opening when he saw that if he chose Boston University, a fine college, fine university, really great reputation, he'd be paying $1,000 a month for 10 years in debt. And he said, "How much is an apartment, Mom?" Now, I'm glad he asked that. He was able to make a different decision because he did have another good option that came in at almost a third less of the cost. That's the University of Minnesota. He'll be a student at the College of Liberal Arts this fall. But I know from talking to not just thought leaders in this area, but parents on the ground, that what's happening today is cost is the major issue for people. And they are freaked out about it, frankly. Now, I think that, as it always has, the state college and university system actually provides probably the very best value that's available to students in Minnesota. It is a place where you can go and achieve a 2 or 4 year degree in 2 or 4 years based on having a good plan and also be able to attain those other things like an internship or 2 or 3 to be able to do and then become employed. But I would say the number one issue in the United States, in Minnesota, for the state college and university system is affordability and how do we stay competitive. Because I think sometimes it can get away from us, but it is a driver in driving students away from making the choice. And with the numbers that I told you, about 70% of our workforce needing some form of higher education, we need more, not less.
A could you describe your understanding of diversity and your experience working with diverse populations?
I love diversity. I love Minneapolis Community and Technical College. When you walk through the halls, it's like walking through the halls of the United Nations. It is one of the most fabulous experiences you could have. I think the success that we have at tribal colleges in the state of Minnesota is really important. So personally, I am very comfortable working with diversity, whether it's racial diversity, socioeconomic diversity, diversity of thought. And I think Representative Detmer could tell you that. I have my way of looking at the world and what I've come to, but that does not mean that Representative Detmer shouldn't be valued in his way of looking at the world. And so I think that diversity can come in many, many different types of packages, and diversity of thought, socioeconomic diversity, racial diversity, diversity in what the experience has been. And I will say that that's important as well here, that just because someone has a PhD does not necessarily make it that they are more valued than the person who has the high school diploma in the state of Minnesota. There's wisdom to learn from each of these situations, and we need to be listening to it.
What is your vision for maximizing access to the educational opportunities for our students?
Mm-hmm. We need to be creative, and I do think that this system has been creative. I think that things like Power of You, which originally, if I'm remembering this right, started, the Power of You allows you to get a two-year degree with basically, we would say, for free, because what it does is it maximizes the resources available that are there. That started through maximizing the federal availability of grants, but it has to keep up. I mean, we have to keep doing things like making sure that the state support, you know, is there. The support from the legislature and the governor need to be there. But then that needs to be partnered with industry support as well. The companies that I work with are very aware that they need the workforce trained and ready to go. And there may be more that needs to be done on that front to partner that up, whether it's scholarships or whether it's direct support or whether it's paying for customized training. Being able to do that and have that be a responsive cycle is an important part of allowing access, making sure we're accounting for those sorts of costs and being able to make that happen. It's a daunting proposal, but I think being able to keep tuition as affordable as possible for students is going to be really, really important in that access point, because too often you see those numbers on a sheet of paper, and if you're a student whose family has struggled to just find housing, it's awfully hard to think about making that sort of investment in yourself. And what we have to do is make sure that we can keep that number as low as possible, but also high quality as possible. And quality and cost, we need to be watching both of those things to keep access going. You know, and I don't know if this question is coming, but I'll tell you, you know, I really think that at least one of the four-year colleges of this system should become the alternative to the University of Minnesota in terms of a place that students want to go to. And so as the U has become more selective, 30,000 applications for 5,000 undergraduate positions this year, seats. And it has also become more global in the nature of the students who are being admitted, which has caused friction with Minnesotans from time to time about, you know, hey, my kid did not get in, and I'm not happy about that. So my question is, can we develop a great alternative that doesn't compete with, but that gives kids the good option to say, you know, if I don't go to the U, if I don't get in at the U, or maybe even if I get in at the U, but the choice is between this and this, and maybe what my family can afford, what I can afford, that I have a great choice. And I don't know which campus that is. I don't know which program that is. I don't necessarily want to even have anything to do with that choice because that's micromanaging. But I do think as a vision for access and for keeping talent in Minnesota, when you think about all that we put in to a student from the time they're a kindergartner to the time they graduate from 12th grade, that's a gigantic investment. And we do know something. We know that where you go to college matters. You often stay in the location where you go to college. You have a much higher likelihood of doing that. So we need to keep those talented students here, and I would put that as part of access as well. Do we have the quality and the cost question answered about how we go forward?
Can you describe the unique challenges of a system comprised of technical, community colleges, and state universities?
Well, I mean, I think we would all acknowledge that it was not quite a shotgun marriage at the time of of commitment, but it was close. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there are success stories around this. I would point to, you know, and you know what you know. So I'm going to say this, you know what you know, and I'm going to talk about the visionary work that was done in Minneapolis between Minneapolis Community Technical College and Metro State a number of years ago, where Metro had a separate campus four blocks down on Hennepin Avenue. And what happened there is working together, the president of Metro State and the president of MCTC said, let's make this work better together. Let's figure out how to retain technical education and two-year preparatory education and make it more seamless for students who want to go on to that four-year degree to do that. And they have done that very successfully. I'm sure there's still some fights that break out between people in faculty meetings over this, but they have done that well. It is something that I think we get, and when I say we, I think just people get very, very divided about, when I don't think we should be so divided. We actually need both and. We need students who are getting a great technical education, whether it is at South Central Community College or whether it is at in the northwest part of the state where there are amazing partnerships going on, Alexandria Technical College and the work that goes on with industry there. This should not be an either-or proposition. We should be embracing that there is definitely a place for the four-year liberal arts or bachelor of science degree in this state university college system. And then there is also absolutely a demand for smart two-year degrees for students who are going to go on to maybe work in a technical field and then go on to found their own business. And that is a very typical pattern out of two-year colleges, especially for folks who are going to be contractors, who are going to work in an area where they could actually go out and be entrepreneurs as well. So I know it exists. I know there's, but I think these are barriers that we have allowed to build up, because we're always in the mode of, you know, nobody's going to have enough. So we always got to fight over the you know, pie that's on the table right now. And we got to keep going back to the number of people that are going to be needed that have a college degree. It's a huge number. And the workforce growth in Minnesota, I just heard Tom Gillespie speak again. You know, I think, and I may reverse these, but I believe that the workforce growth is 900,000 jobs over the next 20 years are going to grow in Minnesota, nearly a million jobs. We know just demographic projections, we're going to grow by at least 500,000 people. You know that there's a retirement bubble going to happen here and going to burst on us. And so we need all of this. We can't just get focused on, you know, one is better than the other. I hope we don't, you know, I hope as trustees we don't have to physically go mediate those differences, but I do think that the mission and fulfillment of the mission and the strategic framework that's been set out by the current trustees is a really important piece of mitigating those differences.
What could be a perceived conflict of interest for you in a trustee role, and how would you handle that situation?
I guess, you know, we have done some work. I said that we did host one of the listening sessions. We would need to somehow disclose that we partnered with MNSCU to host one of the listening sessions, if that were ever an opportunity again. I could see potentially over a single company that's a member of MHTA somehow with the MNSCU system asking for something or wanting something. I'm not quite sure. Personally, I teach a course at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. I don't think that's a conflict at all, but I do that, and I enjoy doing that very much. I'm actually developing a second course for them in the spring. I do that one night a week during the semester that's available. However, I think that's actually an advantage for a trustee to have some contact with graduate-level students and folks who are in the higher education system today, and being able to kind of give a flavor and sense of that, although at a different institution and level. I've always been fairly, I think, cautious and careful about where perceived conflicts or real conflicts may arise, and certainly the counsel to the trustee board would be an important resource on those sorts of things, being able, can you do this? Is this okay? How does this work, and what sorts of disclosures happen? To my knowledge, I have no direct family conflict with the MNSCU system, so.
Okay. Now, are there any questions?
Madam Speaker, had to say that.
President Denver.
What is your understanding of Title IX? Yes. And its role in within the MNSCU system.
Gosh, I will say I haven't thought about that. I have not thought about sports in the MNSCU system too much. I have. I obviously have been a spectator at several hockey games. I will say, but I haven't given that a thought. Are there issues that have come up?
Madam Speaker, but it's not just athletics.
Right,
it could be all the educational opportunities
for the genders.
Yes.
You know, I when I think about that, I think about my mom, because when she went to Minnesota State Mankato, of course there was no Title IX, and back then there were three opportunities, she tells me. She's 88 years old. There were three opportunities for women to pursue in careers. You can name them, can't you?
Nursing, teacher,
and secretary, right? Secretarial role, administrative role. And Title IX, because I am a child of Title IX. I mean, Title IX came in between my sister and I. She's 15 years older. And it changed the world for her. She's a dietetics major at Minnesota State Mankato with a Bachelor of Science degree. She went on to get her graduate degree. How the world changed between the mother and the daughter in terms of what the opportunities were, what the need for making sure that there is access and availability of like programming. And being able to, and, you know, we all think about it as sports first. I did myself. We often think about it as sports, why certain sports are offered or why certain things happen. But it is true that it transformed the way higher education and what the opportunities are for women. And now when we look at, you know, and I don't know this today for the MNSCU system. One of you may know this. But when you look generally at higher education, we know that more women are going to college than young men are going to college. I do think that is potentially something we have to work on here as a Board of Trustees to make sure outreach is happening, because you want to make sure that young men are pursuing higher education as well. And so I would say that Title IX has done great things for allowing and opening and giving access for women. And I certainly have been a beneficiary of Title IX. I would say that we also have to be aware that something has shifted in our world, and we need to make sure that young men, and particularly young men of color, are pursuing college degrees as well.
Yes, Janet?
Madam Speaker, to follow up on that question, what are your thoughts or what do you think of the technical community colleges that are getting into athletics?
Well, you know, I'd like to learn more about it. I'd like to learn what the need is and why, you know, two-year colleges feel that that's an important place for them to be. I mean, I am a big supporter of intramural sports and having a way for students to connect, right? I mean, when you think about sports in college, sports is part of a family for a student. And if the student maybe isn't connected in the classroom as much, they may connect through sports. And I saw that a lot in my experience. I'm a graduate of Gustavus. I saw that that became a family for those students, whether they were the cross-country kids or whether they were the hockey kids or whatever it was, it became a family. And so if the need is around belonging, I think there are many ways to do belonging. And to help students stay active. I mean, the other part of that is, you know, I'll just say from my own experience, I grew up on this farm. I worked every day. My dad used to say, who needs to exercise? I mean, we do this. And he was right. You know, five-pound pails every single day, two on each side, full of stuff, hay bales every day. You know, you got a good workout. I went to Gustavus. I wasn't a sports kid. And I'll tell you, I have carried around some of that weight since the cafeteria at Gustavus for the rest of my life. So if part of the objective as well is about a well-rounded person and being healthy and tackling our obesity epidemic in our state and our country, then I think there's probably a home for some form of physical activity and sports and being able to do the well-rounded person. Does it have to mean that we are doing, you know, intercollegiate play? Maybe not. So that's what I would say about it. I'd have to learn more about why, you know, what level are we doing that at, and why does the administration of that particular two-year institution feel that that's so important. I think there's absolutely a role for intramurals at a two-year college and the ability to connect.
I don't even know if there's more than one.
Well, we know there's...
And I know Dakota County, but I don't know of any others that are into the collegiate sports.
I think there's a couple that may have teams that play...
Some of your junior colleges.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's at least a couple more.
Yeah.
Some have been in the news. Some, you know, there's been some challenges with some of these programs.
Mm-hmm. Sonia?
Within the role of trustee, much attention is given to the University of Minnesota and the MSU system. But there are greater Minnesota out-of-state institutions that need equal attention. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, how would you assure equitable attention mm-hmm. to those institutions in greater Minnesota?
Well, I have to say that being able to visit many of them, I think, has been always eye-opening to me, and being able to see the great work that they're doing. That, I think, is an important part of a trustee's life as well, is being able to get out there and visit campuses to see them in an organized way, not just dropping on by, but, you know, see what is happening. I'm a product of rural Minnesota. So although I've, you know, now I think I just surpassed living in the Twin Cities longer than I lived in rural Minnesota, I do own a property in Le Sueur County in southern Minnesota. And so I think it's important to realize that those access points, which are critical for students who are not able to leave their families, stop working, and be able to go off and have what we often think of as, you know, the four-year college experience. I actually never knew dorms existed, even though they were there at Mankato State, because no one I ever knew lived in the dorm. They lived at home. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to realize that that is most often the case in the cases of the rural two-year colleges and four-year colleges, that a good percentage of people are there because it is the best option available for them that's close to home, that allows them to often work, build a career, and get an education. And so I think they're very, very important. A lot of focus does go here in the metro area, no doubt about it. The population center of the state, you know, is heavily concentrated here, but not exclusively. And I think there's actually, from knowing a few things about the industries I represent broadly, the innovation and technology industries, particularly advanced manufacturing, there's real need and demand in rural Minnesota for educated people to be there. And so that's what we're all about here, is educated people connected to the workforce. And so there needs to be good focus, and not forgetting and not becoming, as we would call in the legend, metro-centric. Mm-hmm. I've often thought that in some ways that can be as large a barrier as political differences in terms of how we move forward in a state like Minnesota, where you're having, you know, I think we have four or five counties that have less than 5,000 people in the county. You know, my neighborhood has 5,000 people in it. And so you think about that, and you think about how you address the needs of very sparse and then very dense populations. That's an important piece of this.
Okay. I have a question, Madam Speaker.
Yes.
I was puzzled by your statement about having an alternative undergraduate institution, an alternative to the University of Minnesota, when Minsky has had for 40 years now a four-year institution here in the Twin Cities. You were talking about choosing which campus. I'm not sure what you mean.
Are you thinking about Metro?
Yeah.
Well, Metro was originally, though, the College Without Walls. It was very, I mean, I don't know that that is necessarily, it now has a lot of walls around it, actually, and maybe it is. Maybe it is. But I don't know, I mean, I have just been through this process watching 450 young people choose where they're going to go. And I would really like it if there were, off the tip of their tongue, a state four-year college that would roll off the tip of their tongue as the other place that they were going to apply to. And I hate to break it to everyone around the room, but that doesn't happen today.
They don't.
And I'm not trying to offend anyone here. I'm just saying it's an opportunity area for the Minsky system.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a market share sort of thing that you really could create. And now I think there's particular programs that are doing that. I think both the engineering programs at St. Cloud and Mankato are starting to develop that way, partly because the alternatives for students who are going to pursue engineering degrees today, I mean, you look, and I know this for a fact from just the watching kids go through it, they're going to try to choose Michigan, or they're going to try to choose, you know, Wash U. That price point for them compared to the University of Minnesota or compared to Mankato or St. Cloud is astronomical. So we have a chance here to, I think, actually use the very thing that's on people's mind to build up the overall sort of four-year quality piece, not just program by program, but as a sort of a real gem. Now, that could create problems in other parts of the system, I will say that, because this has been a confederacy of equals, and that could create problems. But I see a real opportunity for the system to do that.
Mm-hmm. Sonia?
I was just going to say, Madam Speaker, working on the other side of the street with Tri-College and doing orientation with the students, and I'll ask where they're from and what brings them, and they'll say, well, I'm from the Twin Cities, and I didn't get into the University of Minnesota, so they came to NDSU for the engineering program, for the architecture program, too. And so if North Dakota's getting them instead of Minnesota, I'd like to see Minnesota get them, too, instead of North Dakota.
Yeah. So, I mean, believe me, it's a kind of an edgy thought. I will grant you that. It's an edgy thought to think about this and think about how it is, how we could make it happen. But it doesn't necessarily, you know, mean, and maybe there's more than one.
We're just about out of time, but I'm showing all of the candidates the packet from last month of the board meeting, and we wanted to make very sure that all the candidates realized the sacrifices that have to be made to attend the two-day nine meetings a year, as well as other occasions. Do you have any questions about the role of a trustee?
So as part of my research, believe me, I saw that on the application. It gives you a little bit of, you know, 40 hours a month is on the application. And I have reached out and talked to a number of trustees, former trustees and trustees, about time commitment. I have also checked with my board chair, because that's an important piece of this as well, to make sure that there is backup and commitment to doing this sort of civic work. And so I believe that this is very doable. I have to say it is more of a daunting board service than many of the others because of the time commitment. There may be a couple other things that go off my list if this is the case. And so I have a couple of smaller boards that may need to go by the wayside or move to an advisory nature, be on their advisory board meeting once a year or something like that. But that's it's definitely something I've thought about.
Thank you very much. Would you like to make a few closing remarks?
Sure. Absolutely. So, you know, I really appreciate your time and service. This is one of those things that it takes great care to read through all the applications, to seek out good candidates, to make sure that those candidates fit with what your understanding and view of a trustee is, and then that their understanding and view of a trustee matches, and that your recommendations would be welcomed by the governor as well as approval for the Senate. And so I think that's all very daunting, actually, to be asked to go through this. You know, I am really committed to making sure that we have accessible, affordable, high-quality higher education in Minnesota. And being able to, I hope, bring the knowledge and skills and background of 12 years of legislative service for those a speaker, the ability to bring connections to critical industries in Minnesota to the table of trustee, to be able to also, be someone who I think both can be supportive but also ask tough questions of situations, would be a welcome addition to the trustees who are there today and to the support and success of the state college and university system. I believe deeply that the success of Minnesota is connected very strongly to the success of the state college and university system. The MNSCU system plays a critical, critical role in education, in workforce preparation, in employment, and being able to support and work within that, I think, is a real honor. and would be an honor, and it would be something that I would welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.